You ought to know about it now, the way I am. Don't try to change me now, if you don't understand. That's all I'm telling you.
Radio for Women is on the air. Today we have with us Carol Rogers, who's been the PR chair for DC chapter of NOW and has also been active in the Women's Political Educational Coalition, which is the subject of today's program. Carol, what exactly is the Women's Political Educational Coalition and when did y'all get started?
The Women's Political Education Coalition is a new group that was formed just a few months ago. It's a nonpartisan group of representatives of some 16 women's organizations in the District of Columbia. And we got together for the sole purpose of raising issues in the upcoming elections for the D.C. government that are of particular concern to women in the district. We want to bring the issues to the attention of the public at large and also to the attention of the persons running for office so that they can take stands on them and hopefully influence what their actions will be should they be elected. It might be interesting to the listeners, though, to know some of the kinds of groups that are represented in the coalition. They include such groups as, of course, the D.C. chapter of NOW, the D.C. Commission on the Status of Women, the National Committee on Household Employment, Women's Equity Action League, Women's Legal Defense Fund, area political caucuses, and wide-ranging groups, as I say, 16 in all.
So in the past, your meetings are probably centered around writing out things about what are the issues, listing the issues, and expanding on them?
Yes, a large percentage of our meetings have been devoted to delineating some of the issues that we feel are of top concern to women and then formulating groups to develop really explicit positions on these issues, what we think the issues are and what our recommendations are to deal with them. And now we're engaged in getting these issues to the candidates, having them take stands on them, and getting them before the public so they can be aware of them.
Why don't we go into what some of them are right now? There's a list of them I see on your handbill advertisement for the town hall meeting, which is this Saturday. But how did you come? Was there a lot of input from a lot of different women from different parts of the cities, coming from different economic situations and things like this?
Yes, actually, we had a very good representation, and it's really impossible to say who put which issues together because there were like 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 women who would work on a particular issue, and they would talk to people in the community who they knew were particularly concerned about this. For example, child care is a very important priority, we feel, for the district. And people in the community who are concerned about child care, both providers and recipients of daycare services, were contacted and talked to. And the same kinds of things were done with employment issues, with housing, with health issues, education, job training, and the like.
How have you started off educating and whatever to the political candidates? And also, there's also going to be some kind of scorecard that you're going to come out with.
Well, we've got sort of a multifaceted strategy at this point. One of the main ways of reaching the candidates for mayor and at-large city council seats will be through the town meeting that we're going to be holding Saturday, August 10th at the Martin Luther King Library. We've invited the candidates. We've gotten acceptances from most of them for those positions. They'll have an opportunity to speak to the people assembled there, and then the audience will have a chance to ask them questions. In the wards, we have a number of women who are meeting with candidates in each of the wards, talking to them about the concerns that we have delineated and hopefully getting them to take positions on them, and we've had some success so far with that, and we'll be proceeding with that up through the primary in September and even on into the general election in November. So this is, as I say, a multi-stage process. It doesn't stop with the primary. It's not even going to stop with the general election, because after that, when candidates are elected, we hope to come to them with specific legislative proposals to get the issues that we're concerned about actually put on the books.
Carol, how do you feel about the climate of the campaign so far?
Well, I suppose it isn't surprising that the media is really concentrating on the candidates for the office of mayor, and especially at this time the Democratic candidates for mayor looking ahead to the September primary. It appears to us that issues are not really being discussed to a very great extent, specific proposals are not being outlined by the candidates. The media does not seem to be really calling their attention to these kinds of things, and it so far appears to be a campaign of personalities. In the Washington Post on Sunday, August 4, there was four pages, really, transcript excerpts from interviews that were held with both Alexander and Washington, you know, the two Democratic candidates for mayor. In all of this transcript, and even allowing for the fact that they are excerpts, and so the people who put the transcript together had some discretion in what kinds of issues they included, the kinds of issues that we're talking about really weren't raised at all. One of the exceptions is housing, in which both of the Democratic candidates appear to be very interested in doing something about condominium development. And in fact, Mayor Washington has instituted some regulations on that very recently. But in terms of other kinds of issues, on health and on the problems of the elderly, on the difficulties of having adequate child care, Title 34 seems to be a regulation that the candidates, if they know exists, are either trying to forget about or just are not particularly concerned about. And we feel that when you are electing candidates, the issues are what's important. And here in the district, where we're having the first opportunity to elect our government representatives, it's imperative that we find out where they stand on the issues and elect them on that basis.
Could we go into a little bit more detail about what the Women's Coalition found when they started researching into which issues they wanted to include as women's issues and things like this?
Yes, I'd like to do that very much. One of the issues that I've mentioned a few times is child care. And we found a number of things which really isn't surprising. The one very simple blanket statement is that child care in the District of Columbia is very inadequate. When you talk about developmental child care as opposed to merely custodial child care, the situation is really woeful. There are some sections of the city that have none at all, and these frequently are the sections that have a very high need. There are other parts of the city that have daycare facilities available, and they are bringing in children from other parts of the city because there aren't enough children in their particular area to use the services. Now, we feel that this issue of location of child care services is really very important. Another thing we feel that's important are the requirements or restrictions on people who get free or very low-cost child care services when they do exist, and the very low ceiling on income. I think it's $7,000 a year. If a parent makes more than that or household makes more than that, then they're not able to use without cost these government-funded centers. Some of which are very good and some of which are not very good. $7,000 is not a particularly large income, and we feel that this situation needs to be drastically improved. We feel that the system whereby a number of children are cared for in homes that and that funds for this are provided for by the city or the government is not a particularly good system by and large, because most of this in-home care is custodial. And it's developmental child care services that we're really concerned about.
What about this, some of these others? Employment is a big field, I'm sure.
Yes, and we narrowed down our issues in employment to some very narrow ones. Obviously, we're concerned about broad issues of sex discrimination and employment. We're very, very concerned about employment within the D.C. government itself, where we see some woeful deficiencies, particularly when you look at top-level positions, and you find that most of these are held by males. Surprisingly, also in the district, many of these are held by white males. Women are just woefully underrepresented at the top levels of government employment. They also are underrepresented and usually not represented at all on commissions, boards, committees, and so forth, that frequently have a lot of jurisdiction over setting policies and regulations for employment. We're very concerned about minimum wage in the district. The Minimum Wage Board has estimated that for an adequate standard of living, now this is not frills, this is just providing housing, food, you know, the minimum necessities of life, that you need an income of at least $3.09 an hour right now. And that minimum wage is not in effect for any occupations. Most of them are way below that. And we feel that that occupations need to be brought up to the level where workers in these fields can support themselves adequately. The D.C. government also has no minimum wage for household workers. There now is a federal minimum wage provision for household workers, but because we don't have a local government regulation, the enforcement for the minimum wage for household workers is handled by the Department of Labor, and I believe it's out of their Philadelphia office. We feel that household workers in the district would be much better off if we had a local law setting minimum wage for household workers that was enforced by local authorities. There are some 12,000, actually more than 12,000 household workers in the District of Columbia. Most of these are women. So when you talk about household employment, you are talking very definitely about a women's issue. And you're talking about people who are provided with very few benefits. For example, workman's compensation does not exist for household workers in the district. There are some states that have such compensation, and we think that this would be a realistic goal.
Also, older women. There is a surprisingly large number of older women in the District of Columbia, correct?
Yes. Women in the District of Columbia overall are something like 53.5% of the population. It's also interesting that the district has one of the highest percentages of women in the workforce of any jurisdiction in the country. And in fact, nearly half of the workforce in the district, it's nearly 49% really, compared to approximately 40% nationwide of the workforce is women. And some 25% of the population of the district is women of 35 years of age or older. We feel that age discrimination laws need to be set and enforced so that these people are no longer discriminated against in terms of employment. The problem of housing becomes really acute when you begin talking about the elderly, and these are usually retired persons who are on fixed incomes. The great condominium conversions that have been going on with apartment buildings have especially affected these people. A large proportion of them are women. They can't afford to buy condominiums. They're moved out of their apartments, and there is not enough adequate housing in the district. I think we have something like a 1% vacancy rate, which is just incredibly low, and it means when you're trying to find any kind of apartment, it's very difficult. When you're trying to find low-cost housing on a fixed income, it's virtually impossible. We also feel that in terms of public transportation, that the elderly should have 24-hour reduced fares on public transportation, not the kind of system that we have now. And we also feel that it's very important for libraries, schools, and other community kinds of organizations to set up programs for the elderly and for retired people, as some churches have tried to do. We feel it's a responsibility of the community.
Would you like to go into all of these on here?
Well, I would like to mention particularly some of the issues in health, rape,
okay,
and public safety,
fine,
and particularly Title 34 also, because although all the issues are important, these possibly affect more persons than any others. In health, we pointed out four areas that we felt were particularly crucial. One was prenatal care. HEW statistics show that something like 20% of the births in the district have not had access to adequate prenatal care. This has very detrimental effects on the long-range prospects, both for the mother delivering the child and for the child itself. We've also found a very large number of births occurring in the district to very young girls, under 15 years of age and 15 to 17 years of age. One of the reasons for this, we feel, is the inadequate birth control information that's available and birth control devices that are available to girls of these age groups, and we feel that this is a very pressing need for the district. VD is also obviously a very big problem in the district. It becomes particularly acute for women who do not show symptoms when they have gonorrhea and syphilis, especially not until they reach very advanced stages. Some estimate had that the VD clinic on Upshur Street turns away 100 patients a week. So even people who think that they have a problem in this area frequently are unable to get treatment. This is deplorable, and there's really no excuse for it. We've got to have adequate medical facilities for people with VD. And of course, we also need a better educational campaign so that persons who have any prospect at all of having the disease will go in and be tested. Another problem which is usually overlooked in publicly funded programs and other kinds of programs is alcoholism among females. Most of the stories that are written about alcoholics, most of the advertisements that you see about alcoholism show males. There's a very large number of women who are alcoholics, and in fact some estimates are that there are more women alcoholics than men. A survey was done in the district and showed that there were something like 700 beds available for male alcoholics, either in church-sponsored programs or community-sponsored programs or whatever, and fewer than 100 for women. Alcoholism in the district for females is truly a hidden problem, and we feel that this needs to be taken care of. We'd like to see some attention being given on the part of the candidates running for office to what they would do about this problem. Another area of great concern to us, of course, is rape and public safety. The rape statistics show that, or indicate that, something like only 10 to 20% of rapes are reported. This means, of course, that there are a lot of women who have had problems with rape who have never brought it to public attention. They've never gotten adequate treatment if they were physically harmed by it. They have not had access to adequate counseling services for any psychic damages that might have been done. And in fact, when they have reported them, they've run into all kinds of difficulties with the police and with hospitals and with the community at large. The situation in the district has improved with regard to the police and hospital treatments of victims, and is better than it is in many other jurisdictions, but we still have a number of problems. For example, the rape statute of the district still has a corroboration requirement, and that means that it's not good enough for a woman to say that she's been raped. Either somebody has to have watched, and most rapes do not occur in front of audiences, or she has to have some physical signs of rape. And physical signs mean, you know, that she has to have been battered, you know, bruises, torn clothing, and so forth. If she consented to the rape out of fear of her life, but was not in fact harmed physically, so that there are no obvious signs of trauma, it's very difficult in the district now to get a conviction for rape in that case. We feel that this corroboration requirement needs to be eliminated completely. There are also in the district, as in many other jurisdictions, the system whereby a victim's prior sexual experience can be brought into the trial if she has in fact accused someone of rape and they have been caught and they have been brought to trial. And all of these are big ifs because a very small percentage of cases ever get that far. But if they do, if she in fact is not a virgin, this is held against her, regardless of what the accused rapist might have done in the past. This is making the victim of the crime being put on trial actually to a greater extent than the supposed perpetrator of the crime. And we feel that this has to be eliminated also. So we feel that in the areas of rape and public safety, there's a lot to be done. Only a few of the candidates for any of the offices have addressed themselves to this issue at all. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the district now has Title 34, which is one of the most progressive pieces of human rights legislation that exists really in the whole country. And it prohibits discrimination in such things as employment, public accommodations, housing, education, on such bases as sex, marital status, sexual orientation. It's a great statute. It's really a pioneer in its field. However, as of this point, there have been no implementing guidelines issued by the DC government on Title 34. There has been no education of the community to the fact that Title 34 exists, so that if a person has been discriminated against, they know that there's a law prohibiting it and that there is redress. there's been no education of the businesses in the community that might be doing the discrimination to let them know that this is, in fact, illegal. Because, as you know, there is no federal legislation, for example, prohibiting discrimination on sexual orientation or marital status and some of the other things covered under Title 34. We want to see the candidates address themselves to Title 34 and promise and then carry out vigorous enforcement of the legislation when they are put in office.
I think we have enough time to... I would really like to go into the criminal justice field of the issues also.
The criminal justice area is one that's frequently, like female alcoholism, overlooked when it comes to women. Most of the discussions of criminal justice concern males. It's a very acute problem for women. Conditions at the Women's Detention Center in the district are deplorable. Most of the women who are arrested for crimes are arrested for nonviolent crimes. And as you might know, prostitution, of course, represents a very large proportion of these. It's very seldom that a male is arrested for soliciting for prostitution. It's very frequent that females are. This one aspect of the criminal justice system is something that we think should be remedied. In fact, we think that victimless crimes, such as prostitution, should be decriminalized.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you would no longer be arrested and sent to jail for such a thing. Women who are arrested for crimes, tried and convicted, and sent to places for, quote, rehabilitation, frequently have access to no or very little actual rehabilitative services. Those that exist in male detention centers are bad, but those that exist in women's detention centers are even worse. The vocational training that women get in these places are usually in such areas as sewing, household work, not exactly your top-paying occupations, and not exactly the kinds of occupations that are going to
be alternatives.
Right. Provide women with alternatives and help them to get a picture that there is something that they can do with their lives that can give them a substantial income, a livable income, really just a living wage. That they don't have to resort to whatever it is that they had been arrested for before. Also, the visitation situation of women in prison, like the Women's Detention Center, the visitation setup is via a glass cage, and so there is no contact between the woman who is incarcerated there, and this is just for short periods of time. The Women's Detention Center is not used for very long-term problems. But there's no physical contact between the woman who's inside and the person who is visiting her. And some 80% of these women have children. That's a very debilitating thing to have happen to the woman and to her family. We feel that this kind of situation really needs to be eliminated. We also feel that alternatives to incarceration need to be developed for any offenders, really, of less than really major crimes. If a person does not pose a threat to the community, there's really no reason to lock them away for large periods of time. Community-based homes and rehabilitation centers are much more viable alternatives, and we would like to see these investigated and established wherever possible.
There have been a few halfway houses, but they're only for men. There's one for women in district, right?
I believe there's one for women, and that was set up by a church,
yeah.
If I remember correctly. Mm. There have been none established by the government, to the best of my knowledge.
Mm.
And that one that is in existence obviously can only deal with a very few people, certainly nothing like the kind of population that it needs to serve.
Okay. Well, why don't we go into one more time the details of the town hall meeting this next Saturday, and also what are your concrete plans after that?
Okay. This Saturday on August 10th at the Martin Luther King Library, beginning at 10 o'clock in the morning, the 16 women's organizations that are participating in the Women's Political Education Coalition will be holding a town meeting. And we've invited candidates for mayor and at-large city council seats to attend. We've gotten a positive response from the candidates for mayor and from most of the at-large city council persons. We expect a large turnout of people in the audience. The candidates will have an opportunity to make short statements about what they see as the basic issues confronting them in the campaign. Then the audience will have an opportunity to ask them questions about the issues that concern them. We see this as an educative device as much as anything. And as I say, we expect a good turnout for that. That's only one of the things that we're doing. Ward by ward, as I mentioned, we are talking to candidates who are running for the city council about the issues that we feel are of most concern to women in the district, some of which we've talked about here today. Then we also plan, this is all before the September primary, we've sent out a candidate questionnaire in which we've asked them to state their positions on these various issues, and we're going to make their responses available to the public and to the media. We hope to have all of this done before the September 10 primary, which we think is going to be a very important part of the district election. Since most of the voters in the district are registered Democrats, it is not inconceivable that the persons who are elected in the primary on the Democratic ticket will have a very good opportunity of winning in November, though this is not necessarily the case, and they're not the only candidates that we're concerned about either. Between September and the November general election, we will be talking to the candidates who have run in the primary and won, as well as those who have filed as independents and therefore have not needed to run in the primary, to do the same kinds of things, educating them on the issues that concern women in the district and getting them to take stands on them, so that the voting public in November will know where the candidates who are running at that point stand on the issues. Then to follow that up, we hope to come back to the persons who are elected with concrete legislative proposals to get enacted the kinds of things that we're talking about in the campaign. So we see this as a very long-range kind of project, one that will have a decided impact on the district, not just on women in the district, but on everyone in the district.
Okay. Thank you, Carol Rogers from the Women's Political Education Coalition from Washington, D.C. This has been Radio Free Women. This tape has been produced by Radio Free Women. Parts of this program may not be reproduced without written permission from Radio Free Women, Incorporated, Washington, D.C.